but we're going to turn our backs on the river and we're going to walk up again towards the strand.
If you climb the steps next to the Coal Hole pub, you're making your way from the back, dark, ill-lit streets towards the strand. And as you arrive at the top of the steps, there is a sentinel to greet you, casting its cosy glow. This solitary gas lamp seems to mark the boundary between the dark streets behind and the bright lights of the strand up ahead.
And it's a gas lamp, I think, that wouldn't be out of place next to the back of a cupboard in the forests of Narnia. But it's one of many that are, like I say, around Covent Garden and St James's areas, particularly. And if we were to turn to the right onto the Strand and walk down a little way, we have two theatres. On our left would be the Lyceum, on our right the Savoy. And the Lyceum Theatre is very often quoted as being the first theatre in London to be lit with gas light. And that's not entirely true. It was lit briefly as a demonstration by Friedrich Winzer, again, in about 1803, but it wasn't the first permanently lit theatre in London. That was the East London Theatre, also known as the Royalty, in Stepney, way out in the East End, way away from the sort of posh, expensive, big commercial theatres of the West End. But the manager of the Royalty Theatre built a gasworks in the yard alongside, primarily to light the streets. But then he also thought, well, I might as well light the theatre as well. So in 1816, the theatre was the first one in London to be lit with gas. In 1826, it and the gas yard burned down because someone didn't turn the lights off well enough at the end of the night. And theatres, always, forever, theatres are burning down. The combination of any kind of lighting and scenery and stage props and things is a terribly dangerous, disastrous thing. So the Royalty, sadly, has gone. But this is what its auditorium looked like. And what you can see is the chandeliers hanging down around. And if you imagine, if you had either candle or oil lamp sort of chandeliers, you could put them out, you could snuff them. You used to have a boy with a pole and a snuffer who'd go around snuffing out the lamps, but you couldn't then light them again easily. And what gas gave you was control over your lighting. And it didn't really make a massive difference to the lights on stage. They basically were updated versions of the old footlights and side lights and things. But in the auditorium, it meant you could dim the lights for the show, bring them up again for the interval, and then dim them again for the second half. And for the first time, theatre audiences sat in the dark. And it completely changes the experience of going to the theatre, because suddenly it's not so much about you in your box, in your fancy clothes, and looking across and seeing who else is there. You didn't go to the theatre to be seen in the same way. You went to the theatre to watch a play. And, you know, in Shakespeare's day, you went to the theatre to hear a play because they were in the afternoon, in the daylight. But now suddenly you're watching a play. And what do we say when someone is the centre of attention? We still say that they're in the limelight. And this is limelight. And I wanted to include this little diagram because it's so sort of prosaic in amongst all the sparkly bits of film and things I've got. Lime, calcium oxide, is burnt by a gas lamp. So again, like a gas mantle, it's not the gas that we're seeing the light from. It's the gas is used to burn the calcium oxide, which has to be rotated because otherwise it would burn away. So you've got the sort of screw mechanism so that somebody can just be busy rotating this pillar of lime. But the combination of this and mirrors and glazing things was the first time you could get a spotlight. So in the middle of the 1800s, we have spotlights that people can be lit kind of on stage and they can follow them around as well. The other theatre I mentioned has also a claim to kind of theatrical lighting history. The Savoy Theatre was the first theatre in London to be lit with electric light. And we're not going to go into that in too much detail, but for this performance of Iolanthe by Gilbert and Sullivan, Iolanthe, the fairy opera, It was in the early days of electric light, and the designers wanted the fairies on stage to have a lovely sort of soft glow about them, this beautiful little light. And they went to some people and said, make us tiny, tiny, tiny little light bulbs, tiny little ones. And so they did that, and they strung them onto strings, and they wove them through the tiara headdresses and the hair of the fairies. And that's why nowadays, when we put little strings of lights onto our Christmas trees, we call them fairy lights, because the fairies of Iolanthe were the first ones to wear them. And the Savoy Hotel has lovely decorations, and last year they collaborated with Lego, so I can't not show you this picture of the fabulous dragon Christmas tree made of Lego that was in the Savoy foyer this time last year.
If we head north, Henrietta Street seems to have gone quite modern, quite stark, very, very white, straight lines. But when we turn and look towards Covent Garden Market, then the market buildings still have traditional twinkly lights on swags of foliage. And sure enough, in the piazza, there is a sparkly, proper Christmas tree.
And it is a fabulous tree, there's no denying. It has 30,000 lights. Amongst its branches, it has baubles, it's reflective, it's silver and red and fabulous and plump and luscious looking. Remember this one in Trafalgar Square? It's quite elegant, quite sparse, strings of vertical lights, not a very fashionable way of decorating a tree always. Last year people were a little bit mean about the tree. And that's a bit mean. On social media they were mean, and the tree has its own Twitter account every year. So it was a bit unkind to the tree last year. But before we carry on that story too much further, I'm just going to say this photo of the tree in Trafalgar Square, some of you will know my colleague Russell, and it's actually his photo. And I asked if I could use it, because it really, you can see very clearly alongside the tree, to the left is the menorah set up for Hanukkah. And obviously we have lots of different religious festivals throughout the year celebrated in Trafalgar Square. Normally we would celebrate Diwali in Trafalgar Square. We didn't this year. This isn't the greatest image of it. But actually, if you want to celebrate Diwali in London, this is the place you want to be. The Sri Swaminarayan Mandir, which you might be looking at this photo and might think, is that really London? Is that really? Absolutely. It is an astonishing Hindu temple in north west London, just near Cannon's house, very, very importantly. Yeah, mostly known as the Measdon Temple, because that's frankly a bit easier to say. And it's quite near Wembley, where we have our football, our national soccer stadium. In fact, where NFL games are played as well, quite often when they have come over to London in recent years. And very near the North Circular Road, if you know that part of London. And it was built in about 2 years, completed in 1993, and thousands of lumps of stone were taken first to India and carved in India, and then brought to London and assembled here. And it is just an astonishing place, which is generally is open to visit. They're very, very welcome, very happy to have visitors. In fact, I'll put their links on the extras stuff I'm going to send out. Oh, and there you go, in the evenings. But back in Trafalgar Square, back in the controversy from last year. So eventually the Norwegian ambassador got involved, and he wrote a sort of open letter to Londoners, and he basically said, don't be mean about our tree. You know, it's traditional Norwegian decoration, these vertical lights, and she's, you know, she's a lovely tree, and remember why we give it to you. And we've had a tree in Trafalgar Square, we've had a Norwegian tree since 1947. And the tree that we have this year, in this picture, is about 80 years old and about 80 foot high. And she's always known as the Queen of the Forest before she was chopped down from the forests near Oslo. The gentleman on the right is the Norwegian ambassador. On the left is the Mayor of Westminster. And normally the Mayor of Westminster gets to go over to Oslo in October, November time, and takes part in the tree chopping ceremony. And then the tree is shipped across and has been given to us every year since 1947 in gratitude for our help during the Second World War, when the Norwegian government in exile was based here, the royal family were based here. And I think that side of the story has been lost over the years. So what's interesting this year, obviously we didn't have a big opening ceremony with lots of people in the square. What they did instead was an online live streamed, a sort of a version of it. And the whole thing is about half an hour long. I've put a link to it in the extras. But they really tell the story of the tree coming from Norway and the reason why it's brought here. And everyone talks about how emotional it is being involved in transporting the tree, this symbol of friendship and so on. So I think in the light of last year's kind of controversy, they've really made the good use of this year's circumstances to celebrate that story. And I'm going to show you now just a little snippet from the ceremony.